For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Andrew Destin. I am Noah Hiles. As always, we are brought to you by the North Shore Tavern. If you love baseball, you'll love the North Shore Tavern. The interior is wall-to-wall pirates. There are appetizers, entrees, cocktails, and of course, steak and seafood on a sizzling lava stone open every day. The North Shore Tavern is across from PNC Park and is Pittsburgh's home for steak on a stone. Andrew, Pirates take 2-3 again from the Cincinnati Reds. Huge series win on the road. On the road after beating this team 2-3 games at home last week. They respond from a series loss to Tampa Bay last weekend. An ugly first game, but two really nice response wins from Sundays, which I'm sure we'll just start off with now. Or not Sundays, excuse me, Wednesdays. I just assume every series ends on a Sunday. Wednesday's win, I should say, probably being the better of the two simply because you get six really good innings from Luis Ortiz. We'll start with that. Your overall impression from Big Lou, as we like to call him, in his first start of the year.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you know, multiple factors that went into him getting the start, one being Carmen Majinski, who Noah wrote about. Definitely check out his piece if you guys can on post-gazette.com. But Majinski went 2 1/3 innings on Tuesday night, so he was not available as an opener for Lou, who usually has been that opener for the bulk man in Luis Ortiz. But also, Derek Shelton said, hey, you know, we thought Ortiz matched up well against the Reds, and I would say that's fair to say. Limited them to 4 hits. The only run that he gave up was after a bloop single turned into eventually coming around on a double that was just out of the reach of Jack Sawinski on a 50-50 ball that he might have been able to catch. Maybe a better center fielder catches, but we'll get to that later. But otherwise, you know, Ortiz, just an excellent job of loading the strike zone. 85 pitches across 6 innings, supremely efficient. This was his first time as an MLB starter where he did not issue a walk. You know, he's done that in relief appearances, but across 6 to constantly putting the ball in the zone, challenging hitters, and 7 strikeouts. That ties a career high, 4 of them on a fastball that, you know, when he came up, everything was predicated on him throwing close to triple digits, right? Just letting it go out there and hang. And talked with Jason DeLay a little bit after the game, and he's like, yeah, this is the evolution of Luis Ortiz, that he's not throwing 100 with the fastball anymore, but it has much truer life to it. And we saw him blow one past Elly De La Cruz. That was only 96, but it looked a lot faster than that just because of the ride up in the zone and worked out really well for him. So I was thoroughly impressed by what we saw from Ortiz today.
Yeah. I think this is the guy that, you know, everyone quickly gave up on, right? I mean, he barely had a full season in the big leagues and everyone wrote him off, where I feel like there's been a longer leash extended to so many other Pirates starters throughout the years. You know, I mean, people gave Mitch Keller a long leash. People gave Roansy Contreras a longer leash. And you can pick and choose a whole bunch of other different names as well. But, like, this was a guy who was viewed by some people as the most talented pitcher in the organization not long ago. As far as natural stuff goes, it was more just getting him to be able to click on a game day and put together a full body of work through 5-6 innings. And I really think this organization deserves credit for how they've used Luis Ortiz the entire season. I thought he looked pretty good in spring, and he probably deserved to be a starter ahead of Bailey Falter in the rotation in spring. But they said no. They said we're going to use him in a long relief role, and they've made the best use possible of him in this long relief role. I mean, he saved a game, Andrew, to start this month on June 1st. 3-inning save in Toronto, And now we get to the final week of June, and he's going six innings as a starter against the Cincinnati Reds. So just a lot of versatility from Lou this year. Like you pointed out with the stuff, I mean, 19 whiffs today, 19 swings and misses. Only two other Pirates pitchers have done that in a start this year, Paul Skeens and Jared Jones. I'm not putting him on that level, but to transition this conversation now, I think when you look at how this season's going to play out from a pitching standpoint, Luis Ortiz, I think, is going to be a part of this starting rotation. You've got guys on innings limits right now, and we don't know what those numbers are, but you don't want to go too crazily high ahead of what these guys have typically thrown. We talk about Paul Skeens, we talk about Jared Jones. That's more of a down-the-road issue. A guy that we're both probably a little concerned about right now is Bailey Falter, someone who admitted to being tired in his outing Monday, who got shelled Monday, who finished the month of June going 0-4 with a +6 ERA. He looks to be running out of gas a little bit. And when you consider that he's, what, four outs away from eclipsing his career high in innings in a season, maybe you look at Ortiz and think, let's flip him for the second half of the season. Make Ortiz, a guy who's been gradually brought along as a reliever in the first half, move him into the starting role, and you make Bailey Falter your long inning reliever in the second half, simply because their arms and overall health and endurance are in just different spots right now. I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy, Andrew. What do you think of that idea? What do you think of Bailey Falter in general?
Yeah, I think it's something certainly to consider with flip-flopping the two, just given the experience that Falter has when he was with the Phillies and last year too, where he relied on an opener ahead of him. There were times last year with the Pirates where Colin Selby would get the start and then they'd pass it on over to Bailey Falter. I think it's certainly something to consider. With Falter, one note to make there is just that I know he commented to a few of us in Cincinnati after noting that he was exhausted on Monday, that part of that was a little, stomach bug, I believe it was, that he was dealing with last week. So maybe that played a factor in him being exhausted. But the point still stands, though, as you brought up, this is a guy who has not thrown this many MLB innings in a year. In terms of a season in total, when you combine minor league stats, I believe it's right around 130 innings is the most he's ever thrown in a year. He's well on pace to eclipse that. So you got to monitor his innings, certainly, how they go about that, whether that's, an IL stint, phantom or real, whether that's moving him to the bullpen. I think it's something certainly to consider, especially as Martin Perez's return is imminent. So I look at it as Bailey Falter, running out of gas a little bit. Performance is tapering off a little bit. And the way Ortiz is pitching, it's really hard to come up with an argument that would prove contrary to give Ortiz more opportunities and give Falter less opportunities.
On the note of opportunities, let's shift over to Ke'Bryan Hayes. 0-for-17 in his last 17 at-bats. A guy who's hitting, I think, below 200 since returning from the IL in late May. Andrew, what do you do with Ke'Bryan Hayes right now? He's clearly not the offensive player that he wants to be. He's expressed as much to us in recent weeks. Hitting the ball hard at times, it's just not really finding anything. There needs to be more work here. This guy's just not delivering, and I feel like his struggles are kind of being overlooked a little bit because they're not as bad as other people on the team, which we'll get into. But this is a key piece that they need to get going. What do you do with this?
Yeah, it's an interesting spot to go because he's commented to a few of us at various junctures. In early June, it was that he's not thinking about mechanics. A week or two later, it's that he was unhappy with where his swing is at. So it's really hard to determine here what exactly the right course of action with Hayes is. The IL stint or something of that nature is going to, cause a lot of panic because people will turn to the back issues and say, is that what's causing it again? I can't say one way or another if that's something that's still affecting Ke'Bryan Hayes on a day-to-day basis. But no, one thing that we've always turned to with Ke'Bryan Hayes is that even when the results aren't there, what's he usually done as his time as a big leaguer? He's hit the ball hard. That's not taking place right now. Sure, he's had a couple of balls he's laced, but the average exit velocity, you can look at it on Fangraphs or Baseball Savant. He's just not hitting the ball hard. So it's not like it's bad luck. He is just not hitting it well. What do you do here? I think you have to continue to give opportunities to Jared Triolo at third base. That's not to say that, okay, he's going to supplement him as the starter, but it's also worth noting that Triolo's playing time with Nick Gonzalez now here on the active roster, Triolo's playing time has diminished significantly. And Cruz has, fared better against lefties. So Triolo is not getting starts against right or left-handed pitchers at shortstop. So I think it has to be, Ke'Bryan Hayes, instead of starting 5 days a week, 6 days a week, maybe that number trickles back down to four or even three, at least in the interim, until you can get that bat going. Because at this rate, it's not showing any signs of heating up.
So you look at what you could do with Ke'Bryan is just give him, you know, for lack of a better term, bench him a little bit. And they've done that with other guys this year. And a guy they did that with last month was Rowdy Tellez. They essentially just stopped playing him altogether, let him reset, play him maybe once a week, and allow him to kind of find himself. And you look at what that led to with Rowdy. I mean, this guy's hitting over 360 this month. Hit his second home run on Wednesday in the Pirates win. Driving the ball, OPS is over 600, something I never thought I'd see with him in a Pirates uniform. Andrew, my question to you with Rowdy is the need for first base no longer a thing because he's had such a good month, or are you still looking for more from Rowdy Tellez?
Rowdy Tellez has made it redundant to go out and get a first base option, if anything. And this is, again, crazy considering where we were at the end of May. If anything, it would be to compliment him with a right-handed bat, just right. Given how much Connor Joe has struggled this month. He broke out of it a little bit on Wednesday with a couple of base hits, but he was, I believe, 7-for-63 coming into Wednesday's game. So Connor Joe had really been scuffling there. But no, I mean, there were, you know, ideas of, hey, would Josh Bell make sense on an expiring contract to bring back to Pittsburgh? I see zero reason to at this point. Rowdy Tellez is playing up to his contract this month, certainly not on the season on the whole. But it provides nothing to when one of your hottest hitters right now to go out and get a guy to do what he does and limit playing time from Tellez. I see no reason to. At this point, I think that's an afterthought, no?
I agree. I don't anticipate Rowdy Tellez to hit at a 950 OPS clip every month for the rest right. of the year. But if Rowdy Tellez can simply be a league average bat at first base, that's what they were going to go out and acquire anyway. And Josh Bell, for as many people as want him, he's a below league average hitter right now. And pretty much any metric that you look at, I mean, his home runs aren't amazing. He doesn't have a great OPS. I mean, his batting average, whatever stat that tickles your fancy, he's not doing it. So if Rowdy Tellez can be just a league average hitter, which I think, you know, even with a regression that will eventually come, I think he might be able to do that. And if he can just be a league average hitter, hit a couple home runs a month, hit a couple doubles a series, that's what you need from the guy. That's what you pay for when you spend $3.2 million on a first baseman. You're hoping for around a league average bat, a guy who can maybe hit you 10 home runs in the second half of the season. If Rowdy Tellez can do that, that would be what you were looking to acquire anyway. I highly doubt this team was going to go out and get anything much better than that type of production at first base. So I agree with you, Andrew. Maybe you look for a right-handed answer at first base, but then also maybe you just give Connor Joe a minute or two to come out of his slump. It's been ugly recently, but I think that when you play him a little less, he can get himself together, especially if you just give him more opportunities strictly against left-handed pitching. But in order for that to happen, Andrew, things need to get better in the outfield. So let's talk about that next. Center field is a problem for this team. Michael A. Taylor made an atrocious error on Tuesday night. The offense continues to be bad for him. He has hitless in, I believe, his last 15 at-bats. Jack Sawinski, just more of the same since he's come back from AAA Indianapolis. Andrew, what are you doing with center field right now? Is Matt Gorski the answer? Do you call him up hoping for offense? Or is this just a clear, you have to go out and get someone from outside the organization to give you some sort of semblance of offense in center field?
I'll even throw out a third option, man. I will throw out the idea of what if you moved Brian Reynolds back to center field? And it's a crazy theory just because Brian Reynolds' defense at this stage in his career is not where it was back in 2021. But I think all options have to be evaluated here, whether that's Matt Gorski, whether that's bringing up Joshua Palacios once he gets a few more at-bats under his belt. He's dealt with some injuries. He was back in the lineup for Indianapolis on Tuesday night. I think you have to consider everything here. Michael A. Taylor has certainly played a good defensive center field on the whole. However, the play on Tuesday night, you know, that's something that cannot happen. Jack Sawinski, yeah, he had an RBI single on Wednesday, but there were a couple other at-bats where he looked very much lost. Three-pitch strikeouts. It's just the inconsistency there. There's for every one step forward, it feels like two or three steps back with either of those guys. I'm okay. I've said this before. I'm okay with Michael A. Taylor as your fourth or fifth outfielder. but that can't come with the reality of Jack Suwinski getting the lion's share of reps in center field. So I would even consider the notion of, hey, Brian Reynolds moves to center. You call up a Palacios or Gorski to limit the pressure on either of those guys and have them take over corner outfield reps. You can give a little bit more time to Edward Olivares there. And if you get a, you know, right-handed option at first base, then you can make Connor Joe pretty much a full-time outfield option as a fourth outfield or something of that nature. But to your point, Noah, yeah, outside of the organization, that absolutely has to be considered as well. I think everything has to be really at this point.
Yeah, I'll start with Gorski. I think that's the first move you make here. You always, I mean, we hear them every week, stress, you know, we ask about the deadline or getting better. It starts with internal options, internal improvement. A move that you can make on that front is promoting Gorski, a guy who's hitting with power in AAA. He's probably the best power hitter in this organization right now as far as minor league hitters go. You call him up to play center field. You send down Jack Suwinski. And what you do with this is Gorski's your center, everyday center fielder for 2 weeks, I would say. You substitute him late in game with Michael A. Taylor for defense in the later innings. And you allow Jack Suwinski to actually work on something in AAA. Not just give him a week's worth of at-bats and then promote him when someone gets injured, but actually work on something. Because if you look, this guy's gone through so many different swing changes, mechanical changes, approach changes in the last three seasons that he just looks completely lost right now. And he needs to figure it out against inferior talent, which is what can be done in AAA. Now, as far as long-term goes, I think you do need to go exterior. If Gorski doesn't come up and be like a Nick Gonzalez for center field, you need to go outside. You need to go get someone because there's just no other option. And my reasoning behind going out and getting someone else as opposed to what you recommended with Brian Reynolds here, Andrew, and we can round off the show talking about B-Ray, I'm not changing a darn thing to Brian Reynolds right now because right now this guy is carrying this ball club, 23-game hit streak, his OPS well over 800 now, his batting average close to 280 now. The guy's hitting home runs. He's driving the ball with power. He's hitting from both sides of the plate. He's hitting to all fields. He is exactly what this team needs as the offense. You look around the diamond, not getting a lot from the catcher position, just started getting something from first base. Second base has been fine. Shortstop's been fine. Not getting much from third base, not getting anything from at least 1.5 outfield positions. Brian Reynolds has consistently been at the very worst a league average hitter this season. And right now he is well above a league average hitter. I'm not doing anything to change anything in his routine. I'm continuing to play him in left 5 days a week and DHing him on the sixth. I'm giving him an off day when he says he wants one. I'm cooking whatever he wants for dinner. I'm letting him sit in whatever seat he wants on the plane or bus. Brian Reynolds is on fire right now. That's why I'm doing anything that he wants, and I don't think center field is a part of that equation. Andrew?
Yeah, it's tough to disagree with you on any of the points there, man. What I think has been the most impressive thing for me to watch with him is that he's facing in that spot in that two hole. He's getting the best pitches every single at bat, right? I mean, this is a comment that Nick Gonzalez made to me at one point of, hey, you know, I'm watching his ABs and understanding, you know, how pitchers pitch him and understanding how that's going to affect the way that it comes around to me. With Brian Reynolds, what I think is just so impressive is, yeah, like you said, it's hitting it to all fields. He's so locked in with the swing right now. You're also rarely seeing him whiff. I think that's one thing to really bring up is that any time that it's a pitch that he doesn't like, I'll bring up the Hunter Green at bat before he hit the home run there, was just he fouled off pitch after pitch after pitch before he finally got one that he could launch. Earlier in the season, there were a lot of games where, yeah, maybe Brian Reynolds would get a base hit or he'd hit a double, and then he'd have three strikeouts in the game. Like, we're just not seeing that to the same degree right now. He is really locked in right now. And like you said, carrying the offense, that otherwise, not a whole lot there. Jason DeLay with a couple of doubles today. That's something to hang your hat on, but those are more fluky than anything. So, yeah, Brian Reynolds, this is quite the tear that he is on right now. Probably the best of his career by a long shot.
Pirates heading down to Atlanta. Andrew will pass the travel baton to me. He will head home from Cincinnati. I will head down to the ATL, Hotlanta, as the kids call it. Just trying to make Andrew laugh here toward the end of the show. Andrew, before we head out, give me your keys. What's something you're looking forward to watching here in this weekend set against the Braves?
Something that we saw on Tuesday night, and this is a conversation, there'll be a story coming out on this on Thursday, but with the Pirates first base coach, Tarik Brock, was talking about base running, something that the Pirates have done a really good job with this season in terms of swiping bags at an efficient rate, around 84%, which is one of the better rates as a team. On Tuesday, we saw a little bit of them try to be a little bit more aggressive, not to a supreme extent, but when the offense isn't really going. This series against the Reds was a little bit of an aberration because Brian Reynolds kind of carried them, and a couple of unlikely contributors chipped in. But I'm curious to see if against the Braves, if the series ensuing after that, if the Pirates really do start to turn the Jets on, because it's one thing to hang your hat and say, oh, really efficient team at stealing bases. It's another to actually use that to generate offense in the manner that the Pirates did in April of 2023, where that was a real catalyst to their success. Do we see more of that? Tough to say. You got to get guys on base to steal bags. But point being, I'm curious to see if that starts to take place a little bit more in Atlanta. How about yourself?
I'm interested in watching Martin Perez. This is a big piece of the puzzle here. This fifth rotation spot, or just how they use the rotation, is going to drastically impact, one for good or for bad. It's going to drastically determine how far this team can go this year, because that's the strength, right? But you've got so many question marks here, like Bailey Falter, how much longer can he hold up? How are they going to manage the usage of Paul Skenes and Jared Jones? I mean, what do you get from Martin Perez, Marco Gonzalez, Quinn Priester, Braxton Ashcraft, if he gets called up, Domingo Herman, if he gets called up? You've got like 10 guys, only like one of them being Mitch Keller is someone I expect to be in the starting rotation pitching with no limitations or anything for the remainder of the year. If Martin Perez can come back and be an above average pitcher, this will make things a lot easier. It'll allow you to preserve your bullpen a little bit more and maybe get a couple of bullpen starts here and there to space out extra rest days for Paul and Jared. Also just preserving that bullpen will be nice with David Bednar gone right now on the IL. So Martin Perez, big piece to this puzzle. He's back. I believe he'll start Friday. Did they announce that?
Nothing official yet, but we should have that momentarily here. He's going to start this weekend. It's just a matter of which day.
Yes, so which day he will start. But that's what I have my eye on. So he's Andrew Destin. I'm Noah Hiles. As always, this show is brought to you by the North Shore Tavern. Check out all of our work at post-gazette.com and keep tuning in to the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network for all of your Pittsburgh sports coverage by the Post Gazette sports staff. Take care.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.